Okay. So, let's remind ourselves where we are here in the Yerushalmi. So, if you remember, the Yerushalmi opens up by assuming that Tosefet Shviit is derived from a pasuk. Okay, leave aside for a moment the Girsa, but at least the way that the majority of the Mefarshim take it, they change the Girsa to be that of the Bavli, so that this becomes identical to Rabbi Akiva, right? So if you look, for example, the Pnei Moshe, right? You have the Yerushalmi open, so look at the Pnei Moshe for a second. So if you have the art scroll, one, which again, the art scroll just uses the Oz Bahadar. So if you, right, if you don't have an art scroll, but you're using the Otzer Shviit, you know, that huge, the huge one I showed you, right, that's also using the Oz Bahadar Daf, right, so they'll have different Mefarshim on the page than the one over there that Ellie has, right, that's sort of the standard printing of the Yerushalmi, the small black one over there. Ellie, you wanted to show people that one? Right, that one will not have the same Mefarshim on the page, but on the Oz Bahadar setup, you have the Pnei Moshe, the Marafolda, the Rashi Relio, and the Gra, and the Ridbaz and some Dafim as well. So let's just take a minute for biography. Who are these people? Who is the Pnei Moshe? So if you have the art scroll, they will be very helpful. You just open up in the introduction. They have the Pnei Moshe and the Maripanei Machiburim for some Biotel Yerushalmi, the Achidshim Achivetullah. It's the only commentary written on all the Yerushalmi, Nichdav Ayidei Rabbi Moshe Margalit. It's written by Rabbi Moshe Margalit, Rabbah Shel Amsterdam. Okay, and it's published in Tafkuf Tet Vav. Okay, it's like 200 and change years ago. Okay? She goes. You don't have that in the introduction and the printing of all the commentaries, but I have the Hebrew one. Here, let me just look for a second. English one, right? So they tell you who everybody is, right? So the oldest commentary we have is the Rosh Cirilio. Moshe, you want to read the Rosh Cirilio for us? Right, from Sierra Leone.
From Sierra Leone.
Right.
He was born in Spain in 5245, but after the matching sponsor, he lived in
Right. Okay, right, so we're talking end of the 15th century, early 16th century. Okay? Good. Then Pnei Moshe, which is the only running commentary we have on all, like the only classic on all of Yerushalmi, somewhere there. There you go. Okay? Fine. And the Marafolda is the other one you have on the page, who's Marafolda, right? So Pnei Moshe, we're talking late 18th century. Rosh Rili, we're talking late 15th, early 16th century. And Marafolda, you have it? Right, 18, right? What's his years? Okay, good. So if you...
Yeah.
Yes, most of the commentaries in the Yerushalmi are very late. Yes. Because people didn't learn it. Or didn't even have it in many cases. Okay. So based on this, many of the classic Mefarshim assume that our Gemara is following Rabbi Akiva. So if you look, for example, at the Pnei Moshe, right at the top, Pnei Moshe says, At Eimatai Chorshin stay lan Shvid, Mishum Sitzarach lohosif, Mishana Shishido Shvid, Bisur Avodat Aret, Kedialef Rabbi Akiva lekaman, Bepirkin Mikrai. Right, so how does he understand this? Right, Pnei Moshe, right at the top of the page, on Aleph Amud Aleph. Right, the first one. Mishum Shitzarech lohosif, Mishana Shishido Shvid, Bisur Avodat Aret, you must add to the year, Kedialef Mikrai, like we learn. Rabbi Kiva learns later from Psukim. Right, so based on the fact that we're learning Psukim, right, what is the, so the Bnei Moshe takes the assumption that we are, right, that we're working within the framework of Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Now, this is obviously going to create a problem for him when we start talking within, right? Voting and Gadol Menu Chochma Uve Minyan. And we'll see what he does with it, right? So then, second. Right. So now look, if you continue, Ad HaAtzeret. Look, skip to the Pnei Moshe, Ad HaAtzeret. The Ad HaAtzeret yafel l'prisha shishidol me'atzeret ve'alech nireh kemitakein l'tzarech shvi'id v'asur. Right, in Aleph and Aleph, in the Mishnah. Right, got it? Yeah, Pnei Moshe? I told you, try at some point, look at it, right? I know I texted it out. I know none of you do, because once you give a source sheet, then you stop looking at the Yerushalmi. But that's why I specifically said also, right, pay attention. So he said, Uvi Gemara Amrinan, what's the problem? Dera Gamlio Vitino Nimnu Al Shnei Prakim Halalu. Hein Vistei Ilana Tervisilavana Pesach. Kirishin Lakamon Biparak Beis. Vehein Hitiru. The Spirale Drasha Dekraki Rabbi Ishmael. Dilokaya Tosevit Shvit. So how does he understand this, right? How does he say that you can vote out of it, right? If it's min haTorah, what does he say? Right? How does it, right? Bnei Moshe's problem is that the Gemara starts off with Rabbi Akiva, right? As he understands it from a pasuk. The problem is that by the next Amud, what do you have? A vote clearly with rabbinic limitations. So what's his answer? How does he understand it? The Hainitiru de Svirle Drasha de Kra Kiribi Shmael. Right, guys, when I say look at the Mefarshim, try to work it through the sugya, I meant it. Right? So what's the problem? Right, remember, let's remind ourselves the problem. Is that our Gemara clearly starts off with a pasuk, which if you know the Bavli means that you're talking within Rabbi Akiva. But then by the right, very quickly it says that we uprooted it. How did we uproot it? With a vote. And then it has rabbinic limitations on that vote, namely, Gadol Mimenu V'Chochma Minyan, because we'll see as a moment in general, that limitation on uprooting law, unless you have a greater Beit Din, is limited to rabbinic decrees. The problem is that who thinks that this is not biblical? Rabbi Ishmael. Right, so the Lachol Moshe Mi-Sinai, and then there's extensions beyond the Lachol Moshe Mi-Sinai, which are Dirabanan, right? So how does he, right, so how does he deal with it, right? How does the Pnei Moshe deal with the sugya? It's not very smooth at all. How does he deal with it? Exactly, meaning what? Right, how does he read the Yerushalmi? He reads the Yerushalmi as follows. The Gemara in Echanami, it starts off by assuming that it's Rabbi Akiva, it's biblical. And then when the Gemara introduces the claim of Reb Kruspoy in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that they uprooted it with a vote, without telling you what have they just transitioned to? Rabbi Ishmael. Right, you understand the problem, right? You don't. Yes, but what's the problem? Right? Think about the problem with Ibn Moshe. Right? Right? I want you to get into the head of the Mefarshim here. What's the problem? It starts off, again, it starts off with a pasuk, which makes you think they're talking about Rabbi Akiva. But if you assume that the limitations on votes apply, of Chachamim and apply to Derabbanan, so how is it that a few lines later we're saying, why is it Tosefet doesn't apply nowadays? Because there was a vote. I got the men of Chachamim and then the Gemara answers it. Right? But that means that the Gemara at that point seems to be talking in the Derabbanan. But when you're talking in Derabbanan, who do you seem to be talking about? Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel, if you remember, holds that 30 days is Halacha Moshe Mishinai, and beyond that is Derabbanan. Right? And therefore, so what does the Pnei Moshe do? Right? So what methodologically, what does the Pnei Moshe do? He doesn't say we pass Rabbi Gamliel. He says that Rabbi Yochanan, who said that Rabbi Gamliel uprooted with a vote, is going within Rabbi Ishmael. Okay? I know this is confusing, but let's read. Okay, so watch what happens. This is a very confusing way of reading Gemara. Okay, but I want to read through it with you. Okay, and then I want to highlight the problem. Okay, let's look back at the Gemara. Again, does our Gemara quote Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Ishmael? No. So let's read the Gemara according to Bnei Moshe. Ad eimatai chorshin, until when do you plow? Ktiv. Sheshet yamim. Again, I'll change the gears to the way he does. Sheshet yamim ta'avod of ayom ha-shvi tishvot. Becharish uktiv, becharish v'katir tishvot. Which, according to him, is the same pasuk as Rabbi Akiva. So at this stage in the Gemara thinks that Tosefet Shvit all the way up until Pesach or Atzeret is D'oraita, based on the pasuk. Man and kayamin. What are we talking about? In Linyan Shabbat Breishit Velo Kvar Nemar Sheshim Im Tavod Vatitikom Lechtecha. If it's talking about Shabbat, we don't need a pasuk to tell you that Malach HaDas on Shabbat, we already know. V'im Linyan Shabbat Toda Shanim. And if you're talking about Shmit Velo Kvar Nemar Sheshim Im Tizra Sadecha Vatitikom Im Tizmor Karmecha. Elo, imenu inyan le Shabbat Breishit Velo Inyan Shabbatot Shanim. Tineyu inyan v'isur shnei prakim arishonim. Right, so until now, this is all for the Pnei Moshe according to Rabbi Akiva. And how much of Tosefet Shvit is D'oraita according to Rabbi Akiva? All of it. Right, all of it. Right, the biblical requirement, all of it, until Aseret, until Pesach, meaning at any point in which you're working the field, will prepare the field for year 7, it is Asur Shmi D'oraita. Yes? So far, are you with me? Good. Then the Gemara says, "V'charish v'katir tishpot, v'charish k'tir asur, v'eizuzeh charish ar shvishit shehu nichnas l'shvid, v'katir shcharisho asur, v'eizuzeh zekatir shvishit shehu yotzei l'motei shvid." Right? Continues the drasha of Rabbi Akiva. So then the Gemara says, "V'im kein lama ne'emar chorshin ad rosh hashanah." But if that's the case, if it's biblical, so how can you? Very good. So Rebbe Kruspoy, Rishim Rebbe Yochanan, and Gliel, but you know, Etiro, Bezer Shnei Prakim, Arishonim. Rebbe Yochanan says that Rabbi Gamliel voted and waived the prohibitions on Tosefet Shvi'it. Aye, then the Gemara says, Rebbe Yochanan, boy, lo kein taninan. Ein Beit Din Yachol Levatel Divrei Beit Din Chaveiro Ad Sheyigal Gadol Mimenu V'Chochma V'Minyan. Aren't you not allowed to overrule an earlier decision of a Beit Din unless you're greater in number and wisdom? Right? Now, freeze it before the answer. What's the problem? Again, what's the problem for the Bnei Moshe? Is we just said, first of all, that the Gemara is going according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Akiva, D'oraita, according to the Pnei Moshe, reads it all the way up to the Shnei Prakim, right? That's Aseret and Pesach. Right? As long as it's preparing for year 7, so it's Asur biblically. And then the Gemara says, well, we voted it out of existence. And the Gemara has a problem, doesn't have the rabbinic limitations of Gadol Menu V'Chochma V'Minyan. Which, if you think that the limitations of Chochma V'Minyan are only D'rabbanan, so then what choice does the Pnei Moshe have in reading this sugya? What have we just transitioned to? Reading it like Rabbi Ishmael. So how do you do that? Right? Didn't we just say the Gemara is according to Rabbi Akiva? What's his answer? Rabbi Yochanan is going during Rabbi Ishmael. That's exactly it. Right? The way the Gnosha reads it is that the Stama de Gemara, the unnamed physician de Gemara for the first, until this point, is all Rabbi Akiva, who thinks that it's biblical until, right, the Shnei Prakim, right, Pesach, Shavuot, whatever. And then when the Gemara says, but wait a second, nowadays it doesn't apply, we've transitioned that Rabbi Yochanan is now coming in saying, yes, but we don't paskin like Rabbi Akiva, we paskin like Rabbi Ishmael, maybe even more expansive than Rabbi Ishmael as we have it in the Bavli, right? Because it seems that, at least at this stage of Gemara, it assumes that Rabbi Ishmael thinks everything is, well, not biblical, but probably at this stage rabbinic, not even halachal mishmi Sinai, right? We haven't yet introduced that, right? Which, if you remember, we had that stage in the Bavli also, right? And therefore, we could vote it out of existence. The only problem with voting out of existence is Gadol Menon v'Kol Chachamim Minyan, right? What's the problem with the Pnei Moshe? What do you mean it doesn't explain Rabbi Yochanan? Wait,
Can you just say what they mean by that they will be possible, that they, but what Rabbi is saying is technically a share of one interpretation of the right of Allah. Is that what they mean by?
Jacoby says, wait a second, why would you tell me that? Maybe the Gemara means something very different. Maybe the Gemara is going according to Rabbi Akiva's Delraita, and therefore, but nevertheless, what? All right, and therefore what? And then how do you read the continuation of the Gemara, where we voted out of existence? Very good. So Kobe says, I understand. Why do you think that the transition to the Gemara, right? Guys, you got to pay attention. This is very complicated, right? This is the problem with Yerushalmi here, right? Pnei Moshe sees in this claim, well, how is it that nowadays it doesn't apply? Answer, we voted out of existence. How can we vote out of existence? You need to be greater b'chachma of a minyan. He takes that as the Gemara transitioning from Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Ishmael, right? Now, why is he doing that? So there's a few reasons that motivate him. What motivates, before we get to Kobe's point, which is exactly where I want to go, what motivates the Pnei Moshe to do that? What motivates the Pnei Moshe to think that as long as it's quoting a Pasuk, we're talking about Rabbi Akiva, and as soon as it talks about voting out of existence, we're within Rabbi Ishmael, that is Derabanan, maybe entirely Derabanan. Why does he do that? What motivates the Pnei Moshe to read the Gemara that way? So first of all, you can't vote things, right? Maybe he thinks you can't vote things from the Torah out of existence. Okay? Very good. So Kobe says, what are you talking about? You don't vote a Darius out of existence. You vote that that's not what the Torah ever meant. Or it's not voting out of existence. You reinterpret. You call it a vote, but you vote to reinterpret. Right? Good. He has a bigger problem. What's the bigger problem? Well, what's his bigger problem? Right, his bigger problem isn't just that we voted out of existence, but the Gemara challenges and says, you're not allowed to vote it out of existence. Why aren't you allowed to vote it out of existence? Because you're not greater, b'chokhmah v'minyan, you're not greater in number or wisdom. Except, as I mentioned to you, right, according to the Rambam, and according to many of the Rishonim, when do we have such a limitation? That you need to be gadol minyan b'chokhmah v'minyan? Only for what? Only for Derabanan, right? Only for Derabanan. And therefore, if the Gemara is saying you can't vote out of existence because of a Chachma of a Minyan, right? So therefore, what must we be doing? Assuming that it's Derabanan. So one motivation for the Pnei Moshe to transition at this stage in the Gemara from Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Ishmael is the fact that we started out with a Pasuk, which implies that it's Rabbi Akiva. And then we started talking about voting it out, but we had the limitations on votes that are normally reserved for Derabanans. That's half, I think, of what drives the Pnei Moshe. What's the other thing that I think drives the Pnei Moshe to read such a weird Gemara? Read the Gemara in such a weird way. This is what we talked about yesterday. What's the other thing that's obviously driving the Pnei Moshe? No. He doesn't have a third way, right? What, right? All he's trying to do is stuff the Bavli into the Yerushalmi. What motivates him to do that? Because he always steps the Bavli into the Yerushalmi, right? Meaning, right, that's what he does, right? That is what he does all the time. So why is the B'nai Moshe reading our Gemara as transitioning at this stage from Rabbi Akiva to Ishmael? First of all, because he always stuffs the Bavli into the Yerushalmi, and half the Gemara sounded like it was a Pasuk, which is Rabbi Akiva. Then it switches to start to votes with the rabbinic limitations on votes, which sounds like Rabbi Ishmael. And B'chol Mikra, he always reads the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli. So what does he do? Basically, his methodological assumption is, this is essentially more or less the same as the Bavli, but without names. Right? Yeah? We'll see how we paskin. But what did I teach you yesterday? What did we say yesterday? What are we always going to try to do? What are we going to try to do, despite the fact that Mepharshim don't always do this? What are we going to try our best to do? We're going to try to read the Yerushalmi as is. So now let's pretend for a minute that you never knew about the Bavli, or let's say you didn't massacre the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, and change the Girsa such that there is an implied Sira to the Bavli, which doesn't actually exist because we're quoting a different Pasuk, right? Crazy talk there, right? That you didn't change the Girsa in order to make a problem for yourself. Normally you change Girsa to solve problems. In this particular case, they change the Girsa to create problems. Fine? Let's say you didn't do that. For a moment, erase the Bavli from your memory. Okay? Pretend for a moment that you don't think that it's Asur Midaraisa to forget your Torah. It is. Don't ever do that. Never forget Torah. But pretend you don't believe that. Okay? Pretend that you don't think it's Asur and forget the Bavli. And now you just read the Yerushalmi in its own terms. Very good. Okay. So Kobe now says, well, wait a second. Whether or not I call it Rabbi Akiva, the beginning of the Gemara clearly says that Tosefet Shvi'it is from Sukkim, is biblical. What's the problem? Then the Gemara comes in and says that they got rid of it with a vote. And then the Gemara says, how can you get rid of it with a vote? You can never vote things out of existence unless you're Gadol Menah V'Chachma of a Minyan. So Kobi comes in and says, well, wait a second. If I didn't know the Bavli, how would I read the Gemara? Good. Kobi, I'm glad that you did this. So good. Kobi, you said it. What would you do? You look at the Bavli, you look at the Yerushalmi, what would you do?
I'd say that what you're saying is that they're nullifying the interpretation.
Good. So first of all, Kobi says, right? Again, I want you to be very careful. This is, right, it's a short Yerushalmi. Right? But there's a lot packed into it. That's why I told you, make sure you know it backwards and forwards. Right? Good. So Kobe says, wait a second, if I didn't know the Bavli, I would say this is how the Yerushalmi goes. Forget Rabbi Akiva. Beginning of the Yerushalmi, is Tosefet Shvi'it Del-Raita or not? Del-Raita. How do I know it's Del-Raita? It quotes the Pasuk. Good. Agreed. Everyone agrees. Whatever Pasuk it is, it's right? Then the Gemara says, well, nowadays it doesn't apply. Why not? We voted it out of existence. Good. Kobe says, what does it mean we voted out of existence? Not that we undid the takana, but what does it mean? There was a vote that said, you know what, that's not how we understand the Torah. Ah, good. So until that line, it's fine. But then the Gemara says, why are you allowed to do that? Don't you need to be God of the men of the Chacham of the Minyan? And why is that a problem, Josh?
Because you don't need to be.
Very good, because normally we think that for an interpretation you don't need a Gadol Menah V'Chachma Minyan. So now, if we want to read the Yerushalmi in its own terms, what do we need to do, Josh? What? No, what do we need to do?
We need to say that the Yerushalmi has a different...
Very good, we have to say, wait. Why until now have I been assuming that Gadol Menah V'Chachma Minyan is only a limitation on the Derabban? That's what creates the problem, right? But maybe Gadol Menah V'Chachma Minyan is a limitation even on D'oraita. So now we got to figure out. So now, right? That's where I gave you the sheets to this line. Okay, good. So now let me ask you. Why is it that until now I've said over and over again that at this stage in the Gemara it sounds like it's Derabanan because the Gemara says Gadol Menah V'Chachma Minyan? I told you. Who am I following? Who am I following when I just assume that the limitations of Chachma and Minyan only apply to the Rabbanan? Who am I following? No, I told you who I'm following. I'm following the Rambam. Following the Rambam. Good. So turn for a minute to number 4, and let's read the Rambam. Let's understand what the problem is if you hold like the Rambam, and then we can do something heretical, and we're going to challenge the Rambam. Oh, this is terrible. But Moshe has been asking me this now for like a week and a half, which is, why is anything that I'm saying making any sense? Why is there more limitations on a Derabbanan than on a Doraita, right? Moshe has said that at least 5 times. Good. So now let's look at the Rambam. Let's ask the question of the Rambam. Let's understand the Rambam. Then let's see, maybe the Rambam is not how we paskin, or not the only voice. Okay? Good. So the Rambam in Hilchot Mamre, Perek Bez, Halach Aleph, and Bet says, Beit Din HaGadol Shedarshu B'Achad Men HaMidot Kifi Mashinir Eben Encha Din Kach V'danu Din. If you have a court that expounds the Torah with one of the principles of exegesis, and then another court comes and wants to contradict them and understands the Torah differently, are they allowed to? Yes. Shnei Amar, how does the Rambam know that when it comes to biblical interpretation, they can do whatever they want? Shnei Amar, Ela Shofet Asher Yeh Bayamim HaHeit. Because the pasuk says that when you have a shayla, who do you ask? The judges. Asher Yeh Bayamim HaHeit. What does that mean? They'll be in your knees, from which we derive, Inchach Hayav Lalechet Ela Achar Beit Din Shebidarecha, which means that you only follow the court in your own time. In Halach Aleph, when it comes to biblical interpretation, are there any limits to what type of court can overturn the decision of a previous court? No. Halach Bet. Beidin shegazug zera o teknu takana v'hinu minhag. But if there's a court which made a decree, or a rule, an edict, or a custom, upashara davar b'chol Yisrael, and all the Jewish people accept it, and a later court wants to come and uproot it, they want to uproot the original decree, or that edict, or that custom, you can't do it unless you're greater in wisdom and number. Right, but if you're only greater in wisdom or number, then you can't. Afilu batel atam, and he goes on, even if, right, even the reason, even if the reason no longer applies, v'heich yu gdolim mehem b'minyan, ho v'chol beidin, u'beidin 31, how could it be that you're ever greater in number? Isn't every court 71? He says, yeah, what we mean by number is not the people on the court. It means the number of authorities that are alive that agree to the decision of the court. Okay?
What's this? Why does having a greater number that make a difference?
They have greater authority. Okay. Now, the Rambam very clearly says, the limitation of Gadol Menem V'Chachma V'Minyan is only by Derabbanan and not biblical interpretation. So now the question is, Moshe, good. Moshe had this problem since the beginning, which is, I don't understand. So you're telling me that if you think that God said something, it doesn't really take much to overturn that. But if the rabbis say something, oh, then it's really hard to get rid of. And Moshe says, that's not fair. God should have more staying power to his word than the rabbis, right? Yeah, I got it. Good. Now, so good. Now explain to me the Rambam. Very good. I understand Moshe's question. But now answer it. Explain the Rambam for me. Why is Moshe's assumption not the way the Rambam understood it? Why does the Rambam think that biblical interpretation can be easily overturned by a later court, but rabbinic edicts cannot? Meaning what? Very good, Ellie. Why are they on even footing? Good. And why by rabbinic law are they not on equal footing?
I would say that it has something to do with the Jewish idea that wisdom is reduced as a generation.
So it might be, even though the Gemara says, I mean, if it was really true that it was about Yiridat HaDorot, you would never be allowed to overturn an earlier Gzera. But the Gemara assumes that, Ellie, Right? The Gemara assumes that you can in theory. Right? Right?
I assume that's why
it is harder. Oh, okay. Harder. So Ellie says maybe just it's rare. Okay, fine. Good. Okay. Good. But maybe it's not. Okay, good. But let's, right, I think we're 50% of the way there. But let me give you a mashal. Okay? I think you're all on the right track. But let me give you a mashal from American law. Yeah, Zach. No, no, Ellie's right. I think they are an equal footing, but I want you to push it. I want you to sharpen it.
But if one court is much more numerous and qualified of opinion,
So Zach says, what do you mean they're an equal footing? If they're wiser and they're bigger, so then just like they're not an equal footing for rabbinic law, they're not an equal footing for biblical interpretation. Okay, fine. So good. But I still think Ellie's right. I think you need to sharpen your formulation. Let me give you an example from America. Well, yeah, I'll give you one more chance, but a few more chances. But then I want to, right? I think it makes a lot of sense, but you got to be careful.
From the Smart Lock, the basic.
Namely what?
Their view on the Durban is what they, whatever they're thinking.
Okay, good.
And if something comes later and there's part of it, they're going to have a different.
Okay. So Josh is saying something slightly different. What's he saying? Come on. Spell it out. I know this is hard, but spell it out. You're there. All you are there, but you got to articulate it. Remember, if you can't articulate it, you're not clear in your head yet. Right? So Josh says, wait a second. No. Something else going on. What is it? You're almost there. Come on. You can do it. If it's rabbinic law, then what? How about I give you an example from American law, okay? And then we'll go back. Oh, you want to try first?
Sure.
You don't sound confident like you want to try. Try!
So, with the difference between rabbinic law and biblical law.
Biblical interpretation, but yeah, okay.
Is that, with rabbinic law, there's a relevance to time. But with biblical interpretation, it's not just relevance to 90% tell you guys what's wrong.
Okay, good. So why? Good. So why? Right. So you're saying first of all the difference is between interpretation and decrees. Right? Very good. I think you're right. Let me sharpen it, okay? I think if you understand American law, right, this will become very clear, and then we'll understand exactly what the Rambam's saying. Okay? Apologies to the Canadians, but maybe you know enough about American law for this to make sense. You at least went to school at some point in America, so maybe. Okay. Supreme Court of the United States. Okay? Supreme Court of the United States. What's their job?
Making laws.
What? What's their job? Their main job. How is it that they? Yes, they make the decision. Lower courts can't. But what is their job? What are they doing? Right. They're trying to figure out. They're interpreting the Constitution. Right. Now, when they interpret it, right? What is the chalos? What is the status of their interpretation? Is it constitutional or? Is it, right? Let's for a moment say the Constitution is the Torah, right? Is it biblical when they interpret it?
Yeah,
of course, that's what it is, right?
I mean, I don't know about
No, that's what it is, right? Meaning, lahavdil, right? Lahavdil, right? That's what it is. How easy is it for one court to overturn a previous court? It's very easy. And anyone who follows American politics knows that's why everyone is so worried, even 40 years later, 50 years later, right, that Roe v. Wade will be overturned. Because is there, right, why is abortion assumed to be legal in the United States?
Because of
because the Constitution was interpreted as such. And what does it take to overturn it? Against the will of Congress, right? It could be against the will of the Congress, against the will of the people, blah, 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 blah. What does it take? The Supreme Court. Why? Why is the Supreme Court, why is it so easy for the Supreme Court to do it? Because in the end of the day, who are they answerable to? Well, that's not true. No, they're not answerable to the president, not answerable to the Congress. Who are they answerable to? No, they're not answerable to the people. Who are they answerable to? No. No, that's not true. They are answerable to one thing. The Constitution. Right? They only have one job, and that is to interpret the Constitution. And all they need to overturn a previous court is what? It's to reinterpret it. Why is it so easy to do that? Because because the first court's power comes from the fact that they are answerable to the Constitution. They think that's what the Constitution means. And if a later court comes and interprets it differently, then what are they doing? They're reinterpreting. But what are they really doing? Right? Why is it they don't need to be government and chacham and minyan? Because what is it, right?
They are using the power.
Exactly. The authority for both of them comes from the Constitution. What they're arguing, the power doesn't really come from either of them. Their power comes from the fact that they claim that that power was already vested in the Constitution. Right? Wait, one second. Lahavdil, what about an amendment? An amendment. Does anyone claim that the amendment was what the Constitution originally said?
No.
No, by definition, it's an amendment. We changed what the Constitution said, right? And who gets to do that? Who has the power to do that?
Congress.
Congress, right? Congress, states, da-da-da-da. Now you tell me, is it easy to amend the Constitution or undo an amendment in the Constitution, which has happened all at once, right? Right? We've amended it and then amended it back, right? Which is the only one we've done?
Prohibition.
Thank you. Prohibition. Right? That's the only time we've amended it in both directions. How easy is it to amend the Constitution? Oh, it's very hard. What do you need?
You need two-thirds of Congress.
Two-thirds of Congress, three-quarters of the state.
Three-quarters of the state.
Very good. Yeah, very good. Right? Now, you tell me, why is it so hard to amend the Constitution? Why is that harder, right? Why is it that that is so hard? Why do we make that so hard? Because? Meaning, because where's the power really coming from? Meaning, the power is coming from the legislature, or the legislators, right? They're then, in this case, rewriting the law, right? But what gives it staying power? The fact that once it exists, we make it really hard to undo it, because otherwise it would be pointless, right? It would basically be like a bill, right? A bill, right? Congress votes it in, the next, right? Congress can vote it out. But to give it staying power, what do we need to do? Make it really hard to undo, because otherwise it's pointless, right? Otherwise, let's come back to Torah, right? Why is it that by a right that it's so easy to undo it? Because the role of the Beit Din is what? To interpret the Torah. And therefore, for them to undo it, the authority didn't come from the first court or the second court. They're claiming the authority of the Torah. And what do they need to do to uproot the previous interpretation? Reinterpret it. Right? And what they're doing is that's what the Torah always meant. But they are, as it were, they're not the primary source. Right? They're the secondary sources. They're interpreters of, they're answerable to the Torah. Right? So yes, it's biblical law, but why is it so easy to uproot it? Because what they're doing is they're saying, you got it wrong. Right? They're, in Halacha Aleph, they're functioning in the role of the Supreme Court. Right? But by Dirabanan, are they interpreters?
No, they're
legislators. They're not interpreters. They're not the Supreme Court. They're Congress. Right? They're creating law. And what do you need in order to create law that has teeth and has staying power?
Stability.
And how do you give it stability? By making it hard to undo. Right? So by Dirabbanan, where they're creating law, right, they are the primary source. The only way to give them the power to create something that has staying power is to make it hard to undo. But when they're acting as interpreters, right, it's easy to undo because they're not claiming the authority for themselves. They're claiming this is what the Torah always meant. Right? Does that make sense? Oh, so the equivalent in halacha of 2/3 of Congress and 3/4 of the state is Gadol mimenu bechachma v'minyan, which, as Eli said, is pretty hard to do because, right, it may be in theory possible that a later court will be wiser and will have more, right, more consensus around the court, but how likely is that? Right? It's not impossible, right? But it's not likely either. So by derabbanan, in order to make legislation which actually has staying power, what you need to do is make it hard to undo. Right? That's not true by biblical interpretation, because you're acting as interpreters, not legislators. Right?
But in the end of the day, when you have two people arguing about the interpretation of a biblical verse, then we go based on a majority of that.
Correct. Correct. Makovi, now, that, does everyone agree? I think that's what the Rambam wants from our lives. Right? Okay? But now, Kobe is saying, I mean, okay, that's very nice. I mean, it's very nice, very fancy, right? It's a difference between are you interpreting a text and deriving authority from the canonical text, right? Or are you acting the status of legislator, and therefore the later court is answerable to you, right? It's not that you're both answerable to the Torah, the later court is answerable to you. In order to make what you say have staying power, you need to make it hard for them to uproot what you're saying. But Kobe says, Mitzvara, that's very nice, and it might be what the Rambam means, but now Kobe is saying, I'm taking on the Rambam. Right, and Kobe said, but what? Why not? Oh, well, okay. So that's different than I was saying. Kobe is now being a Karaite for a second and saying, wait a second, right? Well, if it's just about what the Torah says, the majority shouldn't matter at all. Right? It should just be whatever you think the Torah means. And if you think the Torah means different, then ignore the majority. What do we call that?
Heresy.
Or in halacha we call that a zaken mamre. Right. Right, we call that a zaken mamre. Because yes, it would lead to anarchy and yes. So Kobe says that obviously isn't true. Rove does make a difference. Meaning, even when it comes to biblical interpretation, it's not just a free-for-all where you just do whatever you think the Torah says. It's not, we're not sola scriptura. Right? We don't just say whatever you think the Torah means, every person is responsible. We still care about majority. Good. Now Kobe pushes it. So good. Kobe pushes it farther. And therefore what?
Therefore, how can you
go down the road? What do you mean? Now you still go? Come on, go, go, go. You're over there. Good. Come on, Kobe. You're the one who's helping me understand the Yerushalmi, right? Kobe says, okay, the problem that the Pnei Moshe had was that he buys the Rambam, that he thinks that Golem and Chochman is only by Derabbanan, and that's why he sees in the Gemara transition from Rabbi Kiva to Rabbi Shmuel, from biblical to non-biblical. But what? How could you read the Yerushalmi differently if you didn't know the Bavli and you didn't know the Rambam, right? Throw everything you knew out the door, right? And read the Yerushalmi as it is in front of you. What might you say, Kobe? You've said it, and now you keep backing off of it because you're scared to say it. Don't be scared.
You can say it, that what we're talking about here is we're saying that we're nullifying interpretation of what the...
And therefore,
it's not talking about their
law. Oh, good! Meaning what? Kobe says, wait, let's get what you said out. Now he's going to challenge himself. But Kobe said, I have a different read of the Yerushalmi, which is, the only reason you're in this situation is because you're following the Rambam. But who says, maybe that's not true. Maybe in the end of the day, the fact that we don't want anarchy and that we do have rules in place for how we determine the d'oraita and how we interpret, maybe it's not true. Maybe the Rambam's wrong. Maybe even when it comes to biblical interpretation, you need chachma, you need gadol menu, chachma minyan. Because maybe in Torah, it's true that in the end of the day, when you're interpreting the Torah, you're answerable to the Torah. But if we made it ki'ilu, easy, for a later court to just reinterpret the Torah, you can get all fancy and lumdish and say, but in the end of the day, That's chaos, right? Think about the rhetoric around Roe v. Wade, right? Which is, but for 40 years, 50 years, people have been living in this reality, and suddenly you're going to change the reality, right? What are they saying? I mean, they're saying a lot of things, but among other things, what are they saying? That just because it's interpretive doesn't mean that there isn't a huge cost to undoing the status quo, right? At the end of the day, if the reality on the ground was that people acted as if abortion is legal, if you now make it illegal, right, even if it's lumdus, by saying, I didn't make it illegal, I said that it always was illegal, right? Very good, lumdus, right? In practice, does that create stability in a society?
No. Once they're already abased and they have a basic level where it won't be chaos
And once you have a Supreme Court, well, why will it be chaos? The Supreme Court decided that it's, well, everyone has respect for the Supreme Court. What do you mean? They'll just be fine with the fact that...
No, I'm saying that...
I don't know. Have you followed American law? I mean, maybe I'm crazy, right?
They've taken American law, though.
I understand. But legal systems do have certain similarities, right? Meaning, what Kobe is saying is, how do you know? Maybe. Why do you think that just because something's biblical interpretation means that we make it easy for you to reinterpret the Torah? In the end of the day, it's not like we tell you follow your own. We still say there's majority, which means that even when it comes to biblical interpretation, do we have rules?
Yeah.
We have rules. So maybe one of the rules that a later Beit Din can only do a Kol HaMoed Minyan, because even in biblical interpretation, we need stability, right? Kobe, you're making my day. Oh, my God. Kobe, you're making me so happy. Good. So, but just in terms of reading the Yerushalmi, if we read the Yerushalmi this way, then, right, again, you forgot the Bavli, you forgot the Rambam. How might you read the Yerushalmi? What is Tosefet Shviit? It's Doraita. Then the Gemara says, why is it not Doraita anymore? Because we voted out of existence. What does it mean, vote? It doesn't mean that we voted a takan out of existence. What does it mean? We voted to reinterpret the Torah. Oh, and then the verse says, but how can you do that? Don't you need to be Godel Chachamim Minyan? What might you say? It's true, but even when it comes to biblical interpretation, there are limitations, and that's why the Gemara is asking the question. The Gemara will answer. We haven't gotten to the answer yet. Right? But maybe the Gemara's question is based on the fact that we have limitations in reinterpretation also. Right? Why would I think that? Why would I think the Rambam is wrong? So now let's go back to the source of the Rambam. Look at number one. The Rambam gets it from the following Mishnah. The Mishnah in Idiot says, two Mishnayot. The Mishnah says as follows, V'lama mazgirin divrei ha-yachid ben ha-irum mirubin. Why do you mention the minority position when amongst the majority? Ha-wil v'in halacha ela ki divrei ha-mirubin. If the halacha always follows majority, why do we bother mentioning the rejected position halacha? So in one of the, so what does the Gemara say? She'im yireh beidin acher, beidin et divrei ha-yachid v'yismoch alav, she'ein beidin yachol levatel divrei beidin chavirot gadol mimenu v'chokma v'minyan. It's such that an earlier court can rely on the minority, a later court rather, can rely on the minority position, because a court cannot uproot that which a previous court said unless it's greater in number and wisdom. Hayago gadol mimenu v'chokma v'lo v'minyan v'minyan v'lo v'chokma v'yochol levatel dvarav ad shigadol mimenu v'chokma v'minyan. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, imkein lama maskirin divrei yachid ben amrubin levat la. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's not why we quote it. We quote minority position to nullify it, namely, shim yomar adam kachani mikubal yomar lo kidivrei ish poni shamat. No, the reason we quote the minority position is what? To make sure that no one ever paskens like it, right? Meaning what? That if you say, I heard that you're supposed to lie down for Kriyat Shema at night, what will you say? You'll say, you're right, that's Beit Shammai. You heard correctly that there was such a position, right? Meaning, the Yehuda says, why do you quote minority positions? Because if you didn't quote it, right, what would happen? You would say, Kriyat Shema, you can say standing, sitting, etc. And then someone will come into these measures and say, but I heard that at night you have to say Kriyat Shema lying down. And what will happen? Everyone will say, really? I never heard that. Maybe he's right. So if you just says, why do I quote the minority position? So everyone will say, you're right, you did hear that. That was Beit Shammah. We just don't paskin that way. So we quote the minority position to make sure that everyone knows that it exists so they don't follow it. Okay? And why do the Chachamim say we quote the minority position? The opposite, so that? So one day you could choose to rely on the minority position. Okay? Yes, the paradox of this, of course, is that Rabbi Yehuda is a minority position, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, why is he quoted? So we don't paskin like him. And according to the Chachamim, why is Rabbi Yehuda quoted? In case we change our mind to paskin Rabbi Yehuda. Yes, that is the great paradox of this mission. It's a wonderful paradox. Fine. Great. Meaning it's encyclopedic, but for a purpose, according to Rabbi Yehuda. It's encyclopedic such that you know what positions were rejected, so you don't accidentally end up relying on them. Okay, good. How does the Rambam read these Mishnayot? Very good. The Rambam thinks that, right, this whole Mishnah is only in Darabbanan, because in Darabbanan there's Chachma v'Minyan, right? But they're right that it's not relevant, right? And again, I gave you in the Gemara, where the Gemara quotes this, Galdamin and Chachma v'Minyan, right, even when the reason doesn't apply anymore. Someone look at the Mishnah and tell me, does the Rambam's position, is it all Mukhrach in the Mishnah? Does the Mishnah say anything about Darabbanan?
No.
Right? Does it say anything about Darabbanan? No. No. What does it say? Does it limit us to Darabbanan?
Yeah.
No, not at all. It's true that in the Gemara in Beit says, quoting in the context of a Takana, but it might also be true of a Takana. For no one said it isn't true of Takana, but does this limit us to Takana in any way? No. Right? No. Right? So, if you look at it, let's read it again. Right? Why do you mention the minority position amongst the majority? If the halacha is only like the majority, which as Kobe said, is that true even of Daraita? A biblical interpretation? Yes. Answer. So now what's the problem? Right, there's something very odd here, which is, okay, let's assume, not like the Rambam, let's just read the Mishnah Kipshuto. Let's just read the Mishnah straight, which is, why do I mention the minority position ever? Biblical, rabbinic, if we don't paskin like the minority. Answer?
So
one day you'll rely on it. That's a little bit weird. Why is that weird? No, according, no, let's, right, you can change it.
Okay.
So, but what's the problem?
The line isn't possible.
Yeah, meaning, in other words, what is Josh saying? Josh is saying, wait a second. I don't understand. I'm a little bit confused. Meaning, why don't you just say that in order to uproot, what did the Mishnah just say? In order to uproot a law, you need the Gadol Men Chachma Minyan. In order to uproot a biblical interpretation, what do you need? Gadol Men Chachma Minyan. What does the minority position have to do with anything here? Because the whole framing of the Mishnah is, why do you mention the minority position? According to this read, isn't the Mishnah just about how you uproot rabbinic laws or biblical interpretations? And the answer is, Gadol Men Chachma Minyan, you need a vote of a greater court?
Yeah.
What's the role of the minority position? What does it do?
No, like,
what does it do?
Yeah,
but why do I need it? What if a later court comes and says, I'm going to uproot the interpretation of a previous court because I think they're wrong? What does the minority position have to do with anything? Why? Maybe, what do you mean? Maybe an earlier court, all 71 people said it was us, sir. Because they understood the Torah one way, and then a later court says, no, we think it's mutter. What does it matter if it was 70 to 1 or 71 to 0? The later court decides that it's mutter. So why shouldn't they be able to say that? But then what's the importance of the minority position? What does this have to do with the minority position? What?
Reinterpreting the Torah. You're calling it that, and you're saying that it's reinterpreting the Torah.
So, oh, good, watch. So Rav Kook pulls this... So Rav Kook pulls this very fancy move. Watch what Rav Kook does, okay? I'm going to tell you Rav Kook outside, okay? This is what Rav Kook says. Kook says as follows. The Rambam's wrong. Gadolin of Chachma Minyan applies even by De'oraita. The last one. No. Turn for a second to the last one. We'll come back to Shiruchan Kanievsky. I know that's blurry. I may have to make a different copy. I'll try to bring in my safer. I lent it to somebody, and he's still borrowing it, so I need to get it back from him. Rav Kook says something very clever. Rav Kook says, the Rambam is wrong. Really, the rule of Chachma Minyan applies to biblical law also. Except, not always. He says as follows. I think this is fascinating. He says, listen. There are two types of biblical interpretation. There's biblical interpretation that is unanimous, and biblical interpretation that is subject to dispute. And he says, listen, if a court comes and says that the Torah means something and unanimously agree that it's usher, then
it's really hard to have
freedom. Not hard. It's impossible. He says, if ever a court reaches unanimity about what the Torah means, then... No, that's only to convict someone. No, that's only convicting someone.
Right.
Meaning, Ellie is correct, that if you have a court that unanimously convicts someone of the death penalty, then it's overturned. Right? The person goes free. But that's only true in that context of Exerda Katuv there, which I don't have time to get into now. But in terms of their role as interpreters, it's not true. One second. Rav Kook says that if a court were ever to reach unanimity, then you could never change that biblical interpretation ever. But if you have a biblical interpretation that is subject to dispute, then what does that mean? That means that both positions were always alive, just one won out and the other lost. But in a later generation, what might happen?
There'll be more of the other opinion.
It might switch, right? So here's what he writes. Okay. Let me try real quick. Right? Let's see if we don't really have time, but okay, do you want to rush through it or do you want to try reading or cook yourself tomorrow? And then we'll recoup. Yeah, this piece isn't so bad. It's not so bad. But what you'll see from Rav Kook, I'll just tell you what to look for in Rav Kook. Right? But what's important about Rav Kook is that even though Rav Kook doesn't talk about every type of biblical law, what is important about Rav Kook? He thinks that there are cases in which Chachma v'Minyan can, and, but for our purposes, what is also important, that it does apply to
biblical
law, right? To biblical law. And if you think that Gadol Minyan with Chachma v'Minyan applies to biblical law, then coming back to the Yerushalmi,
then our Gemara
doesn't need to vacillate between whoever it is who holds it, Tosefta Shvita is d'oraita, and one who holds it's not. Because, as Kobe said, maybe the vote here isn't voting down a rabbinic law. What is it? It's voting to reinterpret the law. And if you think that Gadol Minyan v'Chachma Minyan in any case is a limitation on, not in all cases necessarily, but even in some cases is a limitation on biblical interpretation, then what might we have in our Gemara? What might we have? This is where I wanted to get you. What might we have in our Gemara, magically? A shita, which is neither Rabbi Akiva nor Rabbi Ishmael. Because it's a shita that holds its de'oraita, and nevertheless tries to solve the problems of that the Bavli says within Rabbi Ishmael. But maybe the Yerushalmi doesn't believe it. Maybe the Yerushalmi, unlike the Rambam, thinks that there are limitations to when you can vote out an old interpretation. And the second you say that, then what do we have in our sugya? a sugya which is not identical to the Bavli, right? A sugya that assumes that it's d'oraita, Rabbi Akiva or somebody else, and nevertheless is asking questions about limitations on votes, right? The whole reason that we get into this problem of the Tanei Moshe is because you're shoving the Bavli into the Yerushalmi, right? But if you're open to, and he possibly like the Rambam, right? But if you don't possibly like the Rambam, and you don't start changing your soul, and you're not convinced that you have to read the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli, then you have a totally different way of reading the Yerushalmi, which is, yes, it's biblical, and nevertheless, it's not so easy to vote to change the interpretation. But again, what I want you to do is see that at least in one particular case, if Cook believes that that applies even by biblical law, if you look, you'll see the Melechet Shlomo as well. If you have time, guys, if you manage to get through that tomorrow, then what you need to see is, what we haven't gotten to yet in the Yerushalmi is, the Yerushalmi's answer, which is, remember, where are we in the Yerushalmi? I know you get lost, but where are we in the Yerushalmi? Where the Yerushalmi says, how can you vote to get rid of Tosefet Shviyot? You need to be Gadol Mechachma Meminyan. Now, what could the Yerushalmi have answered? The later court was Gadol Mechachma Meminyan. However, as Eli noted before, we don't usually believe that later courts are greater than Chacham HaMinyan. In this particular case, the Yerushalmi does not. And therefore, the Yerushalmi comes up with a different answer, which is basically unintelligible, right? Hey, what did I tell you? I said, be careful and make sure you're reading the Yerushalmi and you understand every line. And no one believes me. You're like, oh, we got through the Yerushalmi. Did you really get through the Yerushalmi? Did you really understand every line? Did you? No. Okay, good. Good. Tomorrow, try to read this and try to understand, if you finish this, then try to understand the answer of the Yerushalmi.